Okay, so we're almost at the end of the sixth parak. We have a Braisa test in parak Vav, a very unusual story. Omar Biosi bin Kisma. Biosi bin Kisma, whom we don't know too much about, and I've quoted that frequently. I think he was he lived in the time of the Bar Kokhba rebellion, and apparently was opposed to it, and he advised other Chachamim not to get involved and so on. And that's Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma. And there's also an interesting interpretation. His name, Kisma, we assume probably was the name of the father, Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma, or he was from that place. Sometimes we find somebody's called Ben so and so because that's the town he comes from, or Bar so and so, that's where he came. The town was called Kisma in this case. But there's a Rishalmi that said earlier in his life, he was asked to be a Shlich Tzibur. And he was unable to do so. He didn't know it by heart. You know, in those days, obviously, there were no printed siddurim and no printed texts. So he was unable to lead the davening. And later on, he came back to the same shul, and this time he was asked again. This time he led it perfectly, and people nicknamed him Kisma, which means something which is sealed or complete. So he was felt complete. That's why it's called Yod Biyosim and Kisma. In any case, he tells the following story. He met someone who was traveling, and he met someone on the way, and they greeted each other. Where do you come from? Marty, I come from the Ir Gedola Shel Chachamim Shel Sofer. I come from a big city full of Torah scholars and Talmid Chachamim, and sages and so on. And the man said to him, Rabbi, would you be willing to come to our town and live with us? I'll pay you a small fortune. Okay, I'll give you thousands of the golden dinarium and precious gems, and jewels, and so on and so forth, pearls. Okay. He said, even if you give me all the silver and the gold and the precious gems and the pearls in the world, Any dar el makom Torah. I'm only going to live in a place with the makom Torah. Chen kosv sefer tilim ay dedav nach Yisrael. Right, it says in tilim, tovli Torah spicha me alfei zav achesiv. I prefer the Torah to thousands of dollars worth of gold and silver. And below, not only that, but shabishas pitarsim mishaolam. When a person dies and leaves this world, ein malavin lo leadam lo chesiv lo zav lo avan tovus margolios. His silver and his gold and his gems and his precious pearls and so on don't come with him. Like we say in English, you can't take it with you. Right? What accompanies him? The pasuk quoted here is a famous pasuk because it's in the text of the Siyam when you make a hadron. It says, So he refused this offer. There's a lot of interesting things that emerge from this particular story. The ultimate lesson seems to be the importance of living in a Makom Torah. And therefore, Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma did not want it or all the money in the world. Was not going to convince him to leave a Makom Torah, because as he described, I come from a city, Ir Gedola Shel Chachamim Shel Sofrim. I live in a place where there are great Talmid Chachamim, great Torah scholars, and I don't want to move someplace out in the boondock someplace where there's nobody who's learned and so on, no one to speak to, no one to have chavrusas with and so on. And I want to make sure I live in a Makom Torah, I have access to a Makom Torah. And he was not swayed by all of the all of the offers of precious jewels and gems and so on, money, gold and silver and so on. So that's on a simple level. That's what it's about, to understand that sometimes a person has to be willing to incur a financial loss or loss of potential financial gain in order for the sake of learning, okay? The sake of learning and not only learning, but our Makom Torah is a Makom Torah, a place that has what we might call a Jewish infrastructure, right? You have an Erev, you have mikvos, you have yeshivas, you have minyanim, and so on and so forth. The Makom Torah is not only a place to learn, but a place to have a Torah life. And to go to a place that has no Torah life, it wasn't worth it to him. Even though he would have been financially well taken care of, it wasn't worth it to give that up, to give up his being in a Makom Torah. It's an interesting side point, but I think worthwhile. You know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu always gives the refuah, so to speak, before the Makkah. We know that when the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, so 11 years earlier, first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, according to the secular historians, in about 586 BCE. 11 years before that, Yerushalayim was already conquered by the Babylonians, and the what's called in the Psukim, the Chorash or Hamaskir, the Chazal understand it to mean the upper class, the nobility, including the Talmid Chacham and so on, were already exiled to Babel some 11 years earlier than the Churban. That's the pasuk we read in Megillas Esther when we're first introduced to Mordechai. It says, Asher Hoglam Yushalayim, Ish Yehuda Yehoshushan Bir, there's a man named Mordechai. Asher Hog, we read this pasuk in the Echatun. Asher Hoglam Yushalayim, Agol Asher Hoglam, say, Nichanya Melech Yehuda. That was not after the Churban. That was before the Churban. That was Yechaniah, was the king of Yehuda at that time. And he was exiled already into Babel 11 years earlier, 11 years before the Churban Beis HaMikdash. When the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed in 586 BC, 11 years later, then the rest of the people, pretty much just about, there was a small group of people left behind. Some people taken to Egypt, but many, many Jews, where the rest of the Jews were taken off to Babel. But originally, the earlier exile, the first exile, this was according to the simple pasuk, simple reading of the pasuk, Mordechai was part of that exile. As some want to suggest, it wasn't Mordechai, but it was parent or grandparent, because Mordechai ben Yair ben, Shimi ben Kish, Yishimini, so who was Zakka, Shehogla, who was the one who was taken away? Was it Mordechai? Okay, we'll assume it was Mordechai for our purposes right now. Yechezkel HaNavi. Yechezkel HaNavi was also among those Jews who were taken away at that time from Eretz Yisrael and brought into Babel. We know that Yechezkel was in Babel when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, because the Psukim record that it was a number of months later that Yechezkel got the word that the Beis HaMikdash had fallen. He was together with the rest of the Babylonian community. So, and who was taken at that time again? Yechezkel, Mordechai, the leaders, the upper class, the what we call perhaps in English the intelligentsia, you know, they were taken. But in a certain sense, that was a positive. Not that the Golus itself was a positive, because obviously we would rather the Beis HaMikdash were not destroyed. However, what this meant was that when the Jews, the majority of the rest of the Jewish community, when they came 11 years later, since among those who were taken the first time were Talmid Chachamim and Jewish leaders and so on, they built up a community in Babel. And so by the time the other Jews arrived, there was already a quote-unquote Jewish infrastructure. Okay, very possibly the yeshiva of Sura, ancient yeshivas, was already set up. Some sort of yeshiva was already set up. And so you already had a Torah infrastructure by the time the majority of the Jews came. Chazal have a similar drusha that when Yaakov Avinu went down to Mitzrayim, it says, the Pasuk says, towards the end of Sefer Bereishis, it was Yehuda, and Pasuk Parashat Yigash, it was Yehuda shalach lehoros lefanav Goshna. He set up Yehuda, sent Yehuda in advance. What's the idea? So Chazal say, to set up some sort of a, well, whatever means a base measure, something that could have a Jewish infrastructure to it. So it's important to have, we live in a place where there's a Jewish infrastructure. And that's what the Rebbe Kisman said, all the money in the world is not worth my giving that up. So that's the simple message of this Mishnah. However, one can ask, and it's a powerful question. Obviously, this individual who spoke to Rebbe Kisman was living in that town, because he says, Rebbe Ritzon Chasha Tadori Mona Bim Komeno, would you come live in our place? Sounds like they were looking for a Rav, a Manig, someone to go lead them. And it's true that some, you know, it's much easier to stay in where the yeshiva is, where everything is, but there's also a certain amount of value to make, you know, to go to a place and help and serve and minister to the people there. Not only that, but someone who's talented can build that place into a Makom Torah. We have countless examples, including in recent history. I'm talking about ancient history, but including recent history, including here in the United States, where people went to places which at first were not, you know, exactly known for being thriving from Orthodox communities, and talented Rabbanim and Balabatim built these places up. So one can wonder, especially since obviously money was no object here. Okay, you had the financial backing, you had the financial support available. So one can ask why Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma refused. Perhaps he could have, you know, been one of those people who went and built up a Torah community in a new place. And that's necessary too. There are Jews who have to live in far-flung places, perhaps sometimes because of business needs or other situations. And, you know, he could have built up a community there. So that's a question which bothers some of the Mefarshim. Some will simply say Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma knew his own personality. And that itself is a lesson. that a person has to know himself, and felt that he was not, that was not his area of strength. And he was not one of these people who was able to come to a new place and build, and some other people who can. That's one possibility. There are a number, you understand the question, right? It's a good question. Why didn't the Bishop Kisma go and build up a new community, especially with significant financial backing? So others suggest that where Yosef and Kisma lived, even though it was a city of Torah, okay, he felt that perhaps his presence in the other city was necessary. If he would leave the first city, then that city would lose some of its, even though there are other Talmidei Chacham there, maybe he was the leader, and he felt that if he would leave, it would be a risk to that community. So what gives you the right to choose community A over community B? If you're the leader of community A, so it's hard to leave. This is an issue which has come up in discussions sometimes. You know, the people talk about this when people talk about moving to Eretz Yisrael. I'm talking about nowadays, in contemporary times. Some people feel that, well, not going to the details right now, we know that the Ramban, the simple reading of the Ramban and Chumash, the Ramban and his addenda, the Ram Sefer Mitzvahs, and Mitzvahs Essay Min HaTorah, to live in Eretz Yisrael. So why don't we do it? You know, why aren't people going to live in Eretz Yisrael? So the answer is given in the days of Rishonim. It's simply very difficult to apply today. They talk about the difficulty in traveling there. It's dangerous to get there. It's dangerous to live there. Yeah, that's not so much true anymore. It's not even more dangerous there, perhaps, than other places. But some suggest, at least for Rabbanim and Talmidei Chachamim and Manhigim and Morei Torah and Rebbeim and so on, that we need to, not every Jew is going to pick up and move. So somebody has to stay with the Jews living here. So you have a little bit of a teretz. I don't know if that whole subject right now, but you have a little bit of a teretz if you're somebody who's a rabbi, a teacher, a rabbi. So you're going to leave, so it's going to hurt the community which you be part of building now. So therefore, so to speak, you're putter perhaps, or you have a teretz at least. I don't move teretz Yisrael because I'm needed here in Chutz Lartz. That's certainly an answer which has been given on behalf of Talmidei Chachamim, both in our times and contemporary times and before in Europe and so on, who did not want to, most people did not want to move to Eretz Yisrael. And, of course, looking back now on the European scene, we know what ended up happening in the European community. We can look with 2020 hindsight and realize that perhaps a mistake was made and so on, but who knows, okay? But at the time, you know, the decision made was they were needed in their land. They were needed to minister to the people there who were not going to be able to pick up and move. So maybe that was the approach. We also kiss them. I can't leave my current community because that'll, leave them in the lurch, so to speak. Another possibility at some point, too, is the fact that the person who approached Yosef and Kisma just said, we want you to come live in our community. Never said to him, let's go build a community together, right? You have to look at what he said and what he just said. Come live with us in our place. Shadadur imonim komeinu. Okay? Just live in our place. And they didn't say, let's build up a community. We need a rav and so on and so forth. And perhaps that's what triggered in Yosef and Kisma's mind. Some hesitation. You know, what were they interested in him coming for? They wanted just to have a title, a position, so now they can say, we have a Rav too, right? Or they perhaps weren't interested in anything more that he could bring to the table. So that, you know, that he might have wanted to do, perhaps he could have done, but they did not get the message from this wealthy man that this is what they were looking for. Sometimes it goes even further. Sometimes people want to bring a Rav or somebody into town so they can point and say, well, he's the rabbi. He's religious for us. This was a common thing in the United States, especially in the mid-1900s, where the previous century, the middle of the 20th century, when you had these outlying communities, the rabbi was very well respected. I'm talking about even conservative and reform communities and so on. The rabbi was very much respected, but he didn't impact what the people did. The rabbi can't. My mother, Alei Shalom, grew up in such a community where so she was the daughter of the rabbi. So she can't go. She can't come with us Friday night, or she can't eat this food and so on. So she's a rabbi's daughter. You're Jewish, you can't eat it either. You can't do it on a Friday night either. But people felt that the rabbi, again, I don't think it's so commonly believed today, but in some communities, nice people, and they're active in their synagogues and so on. But the synagogue was a place, well, when I'm in the synagogue, we'll pray and we'll worship. It's got nothing to do with my daily life. The rabbi, he's religious for us. He's the he represents us, and he'll be careful about Shabbos and careful about keeping kosher, but it doesn't impact anything. When we're around him, we'll be respectful of him and so on. You know, we won't do things in front of him, but other than that, you know, it's not going to have too much impact on our lives. And that was, again, not an uncommon thing, especially in out-of-town communities in the mid or so 20th century. But perhaps that's what Rabbi Yosef Kisma was nervous about. I felt that, they were interested. That's the words, right? Come to our place on our terms. We're not interested in changing. We're not interested in doing anything. You come live here and you'll be our religious, the spiritual leader. It's not going to impact anything we do. So perhaps that's what he was suspicious about. Other commentaries, I think that Barbanel has an approach to this that's just completely different, and that actually was no real story like this at all, but rather the Barbanel says this was a whole thing's a mashal. Whole thing's a mashal, okay? And basically what it means, what's telling us is that when he says, because he said he's going on his way. The language of the Braisa is Pam achas ha'isim mahalech baderech. I was traveling someplace and I met up with this person. Why is it shit? He was traveling. Who cares? What if he would have been home and the person knocked on his door? Why is that relevant? That he was traveling someplace. So the Barbanel says that it's a marshal that he was traveling along along the path of life. Okay, along the path of life. And this is really like it's a mashal, and what this person was tempting him to leave the place of Torah for the sake of wealth. That wasn't a real story, but basically, he was being tempted. So the whole thing's understood as a mashal, okay. And of course, financial well-being and financial success and comfort is very important, but sometimes it could lead a person down the wrong path. Sometimes, you know, the enticement of wealth to give up your Torah, the Mokum Torah, and so on for the sake of wealth. You know, first of all, just as a side point, you know, when you're offered something by somebody else, I'm interrupting myself, but I forgot to say this before. You know, sometimes in expression in English, if something sounds too good to be true, it usually is, right? This sounded wonderful. We'll give you whatever you want. You come live with us. Yeah, but what demands are going to be made? Okay, there are people who had all kinds of run-ins with wealthy people in their communities. Okay, who, you'll come, but we're paying you, Rabbi. Okay, we're paying you. We're going to tell you what to do. Again, I'm interrupting myself. I forgot to say, someone I know who now lives in Eretz Yisrael, but he was a member of my shul when he lived in our area here in Teaneck. So he said his father was once the rabbi of a community out west someplace, I think in Western Canada. And, there was an Orthodox rabbi, he was a Talmud of the Rav. But, he lived in a town where, a lot of people were not observant. So the president of the shul, a wealthy man from the shul, one of his children got engaged to a non-Jew. And so the rabbi refused to put the announcement in the shul, in the shul bulletin, the shul announcements, mazel tov, and so on and so forth. So this man was outraged. You know, he said, Rabbi, that's not up to you. That's not your domain. Okay, we're putting this in. I'm the financial backing of the synagogue. The rabbi said, not while I'm here, you're not putting that in. So this person immediately wanted to get rid of the rabbi. So he had a board meeting and had a whole big debate. And anyway, I don't know how many people on the board, I was guessing. So he said, let's say they had 13 people on the board. I think that's what he told me. And the board voted 8-5 in favor of the rabbi. In favor of the rabbi. So, they came and reported, another person came to Rabbi, good news, the board voted in your favor. It was 8-5. And this rabbi said, I'm submitting my resignation. You mean to tell me there are 5 people in the synagogue on the board who are saying that it's not up to the rabbi to make these kinds of decisions? I can't work here. Right? So he left the position without another job waiting for him somewhere else. So it means that he was a tough person. He recognized that, people have money and so on and so forth. It's not always so simple. But getting back to Abarbanel, he said the whole thing was, as I said, the whole thing is a kind of a marshal that, that along the path of life, a lot of times people are offered temptations that can lead them away. And Rabbi Yosef Kisma resisted that. Just to conclude, this Bryce at the very end, it says when a person leaves the world, okay, he's not accompanied by his gold and silver. As I say, you can't take it with you. I remember, I think I may have mentioned this once before. The story is that the two people were talking at a funeral of a very wealthy man, and one said to the other, "How much did he leave behind?" And the other person said, "All of it." right? He left everything behind. All the money and all the wealth doesn't come with you. What comes with you is your Torah and your Ma'asim Tovim, because they have lasting impacts, okay? All our possessions, like Shlomo HaMelech says, all our possessions stay here after we leave, and who knows who's going to use them next, and who knows the person may use them and abuse them and misuse them. The Pasuk in Koheles, right? Who knows if the person after me is going to be wise, is going to use it, but our that's our physical luxuries. But Torah and Ma'asim Tovim, that accompany a person, that's what defines the person ultimately, and that's what comes with him after he leaves this world. Okay, we'll stop over here.